Hi, and welcome to the Sports Info Solutions Baseball Podcast. I'm Mark Simon. We've got a three-level show covering the majors, the minors, and college baseball, too, and we'll attack them in reverse order. First up, it's a first baseman. We wanted to talk to a defensive stud, and we got one, Trey Morgan of top-ranked LSU. Let's get right to it. Now, we're pleased to be joined by Trey Morgan, first baseman left fielder for the Louisiana State baseball team that has been ranked number one in the country for most of the season. Trey hitting at 309, OPS over 900 at the time that we're speaking, LSU at the time that we're conversing, 21-3 this season, and has been ranked number one throughout much of the year. Talk to any college baseball media person, they will tell you that Trey Morgan is the best defensive first baseman to come through the sport in quite some time. How you doing, Trey?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. So whenever we have a player guest on, major leagues, minor leagues, college, whatever, we ask them essentially for their defense origin story, meaning, can you remember like the first time that you made a really great play and what it was like?
I'll tell you the first time that I actually picked the ball in a game. So me and my dad, you know, we worked on picks all the time in practice, you know, over and over again. So our magic number was 10. My dad would start at second base and throw me 10 picks. Then you go to shortstop, throw me 10 picks. Then third, throw me 10 picks. But I never really realized, or I don't know if I still expected to like actually do it in the game sort of thing. So when it first happened, it was a ground ball to shortstop, actually. And I was about, I'd say, 7 years old. And it was a ground ball to shortstop. Kid threw it over, and I picked it. And the biggest smile went across my face, and you could just hear my dad in the stands. I remember hearing my dad like, yeah, I did it. So I'd say that was my earliest memory of defense.
And now that kind of leads into everything that's happened for you at first base. As I said, all defensive team SEC in the past, highly regarded by people who follow Division I baseball, expected to go in the first two rounds of the MLB draft this year. All right, so how has your defense developed over the years? I know you said your dad played a pretty integral role in that, but how did it develop further as you've kind of come along?
Yeah, I'd say it's just picking up minor things from when I go to camps or when I'm playing with the break group of guys, like when I went to Team USA this summer, or I used to go to the development leagues out there in Vero Beach, Florida for a breakthrough series. And it's just picking up stuff from the great minds that they had out there. I remember one big one that I use to this day, obviously, but I didn't like at first was I had a coach. He came up to me and he was like, I wish I could remember his name, but I can't right now. But he came up to me and he was like, Trey, why do you always just keep your left foot on the base? Like, why is that left foot the only one that's like anchored down on the base? And I was like, that's how I was taught to do it. Like that. That's how I'm supposed to do it. That's the right way to go. And then he was like, all right, let me show you something. So then he set up on the base and started shuffling left and right. You know, if the ball was to his right, he kept his left foot on the base. But if the ball was to his right, he switched speed and put his right foot on the base, which made his body longer. I went to my dad and I was like, Dad, this isn't like what she told me, like, this isn't right. He's like, just try it out for a little bit. Like, obviously, he knows what he's talking about. And that's kind of something that has helped boost me a little bit because I'm not the tallest first baseman. I'm a little undersized. But being able to do that and make myself as tall and as long as possible definitely helps me.
6'1", as you said, a little. It's funny to call someone 6'1", undersized. Who are the major league first basemen that you followed and watched throughout your career?
I like to watch Anthony Rizzo play over there and Freddie Freeman. Those are my two. Those are the two guys I really watch and try to emulate.
Is there something that either of them do in particular that you pick up on?
It's really how, on the offensive side, for me, how they hit with both contact and power, like not giving hitting for power for striking out 100 times in the season. Because I was taught striking out is the most embarrassing thing to do in a baseball game. And that's kind of something that I look for in major league players. Like, how do I keep the contact that I have, but still kind of access some of that power?
All right, sticking with defense, give us a kind of a scouting report on yourself. Where do you feel you're particularly strong? I presume picks would be one thing. And then where do you feel you're looking to improve?
I'm definitely like you said, I'm pretty good at picks. I feel like as soon as I see a ball going down towards the ground, pretty much know exactly where it's going to bounce, and I just flick my glove right there. I say I'm also really good at moving to my right. That little 3-4 hole where you get kind of singles or doubles if the right fielder's on the right spot, kind of lock that hole down. I want to be able to start moving to my left and still being able to turn two. You know, but if it's like a first and second situation, I'm like kind of playing behind the runner and there's a ball down the line, I want to be able to start whipping it to second a little bit more. Yeah, I'd say that's pretty much the scouting report.
Is there a play this season in particular that you're really proud of?
For the most part of this season, I was kind of in left. But I got, it's like some, I can't think of one. But it's really, I like when a ball's hit about over 100 to my right and I kind of lay out and pick it because that's definitely stealing a hit and sometimes a run away from the other team. And I kind of smile a little bit when I do that.
Let's talk about left field a little bit. What has it been like to play there this season?
It was a little bit different for me, you know, because I've worked so hard at trying to master first base. And when I talked to Coach Johnson about playing more left field, I didn't want to just go out there and kind of be, you know, an average left fielder. So I had to work just as hard in left as I do at first base, taking the same amount of reps, even more reps in left, since it's kind of newer to me. And that's really what helped me, those extra reps that we do in practice. I feel like I'm becoming better outfielder by the day, and I've made some cool plays in the outfield. It feels a little bit better when you make a little diving play in the outfield. That one definitely feels a little bit cooler.
Because you're landing on grass and not dirt?
Oh, yeah, it feels better. But I feel like it's because you're saving extra bases. Sure, like there's nobody behind you.
Do you have a catch this year that you particularly like?
I'd say I made a cool one actually this weekend, but I'd say it was my first diving play. It was kind of a night game. It was my second or third time playing outfield, so it was kind of still new to me. Righty hooked the ball right down the line, and it was kind of a low little liner, so I was kind of staying under it till the last possible second, and then I dove and caught it, and I was like, yeah, that was not okay.
In terms of challenges of playing left field, talk to major league outfielders about this in the past, adjusting to fences, adjusting to the ball that's hit right at you on a line drive. Has there been kind of like a welcome to the outfield moment for you where you kind of realize, oh, shoot, I'm out here?
Yeah, it was my first game actually playing out there. And I didn't really realize, I guess, my depth perception was a little off and I was in left and I was a little too shallow with the full side guy who had, I think he had like six pumps and it was game 3 or 4 of the season. So he kind of trended upwards. So he hit a ball over my head and wind was kind of blowing in actually. So I thought, you know, over my head, I'll get a chance to run it down. But he hit it over my head and I just took off running straight back. Like didn't put it on the shoulder, just kept the ball straight forward with my head. And I ran clean into the chain link fence, like not a padded one. Chain link fence just did break stride. Boom, right into it and dropped. I was like, it actually put me out for the next game because I couldn't move my wrist. Yeah, no, it was bad. But I'm all good now.
It's funny that you bring that up because we had talked, I think it was last year with Brett Phillips, and he was talking about his major league debut. And he said that essentially the worst play of his career came in his major league debut. So for you, hopefully for your sake, that's the one time that happens.
Good feeling for the fence now. I know I had to make sure it's out there. Definitely.
Well, certainly be careful. Let's talk about hitting for a minute here. So far this season, hitting over 300, hit 324 last year, 357 as a freshman, stole 15 bags as a freshman too. But how have things been at the plate for you this year?
It's actually, this year has been a little bit of a grind for me, trying to work some things out. Started off the season digging a hole for myself early, actually. I started off over 8 opening weekend. So that kind of, I wouldn't say woke me up. I'd say it gave me a little reality check. Like, it's go time. Like, I had to get back in the cages and stick to my plan. The biggest thing for me was trusting the process, not being worried about the result, because the results are going to happen either way. That's why it's called an average. Like, I feel like the best thing I heard was, I'm a 300 hitter. It's going to be around 300 because it's going to average out sort of thing. And that's kind of the confidence that I needed. Yeah, coming off that 0-8 weekend, I had to kind of find myself a little bit. But ever since then, I've kind of been trending upwards. Had a pretty good weekend against Arkansas. So hopefully we can keep that going.
300, 400, 500 guy batting average on base, slugging this year. Heard a lot about one of your pitchers on the team. You want to give us a little rundown on Paul?
Paul Skeens?
Yep.
Yeah. We know that when it's Friday and he's on the mound, we know that every single pitch, he is going to give us everything he's got. And he is fully prepared. The preparation that dude puts into, whether it be his body or his mechanics or anything like that, is just unmatched. Like, he gets to the field first, leaves last, brings that work ethic that we needed. And he leads by example. He's an awesome dude, too.
71 strikeouts, 7 walks, and 37 and a third innings at the time that we're talking here. 5-0 with an 0.72 ERA. How good is this LSU team?
I'd say this is definitely one of the best teams I've been on, if not the best. I mean, it's not just based off of results, because like I said, like we, Coach Johnson preaches all the time, it's not about the result, it's about the process. And we show that by every practice means something to us. We don't just walk on the field and give a day away. And even if we're about to, like if we start off slow, the whole team brings it in and it's like, let's go. Like, we're not giving this day away. And that's why we're so confident when we step onto the field to play somebody else, because we know we've invested enough man hours to prepare to be ready to win in any situation.
And just to close here, just give a shout out. Who's helped you at the college level with your defense?
I've had a few field coaches, but I'd say the person who helped me the most actually is my teammate, Cade Beloso. Yeah, when I first stepped on campus, we were competing for that position. He kind of took me under his wing, and he definitely didn't have to do that at all. And I appreciate him for that every day. We're the best of friends. But he taught me that it's going to be a grind. Like, this isn't a little high school baseball season. You play, what, like 30 games or anything like that, and you're good. If even 30 games, I don't remember how many we played. Every game matters. Taught me how to take care of my body. He taught me how to move around the bag at the college level, because obviously these are the best players in the country on your team who all throw over 90 across the infield. Like, they're not going to start a little lollipop. So, yeah, I'd say Cade Beloso definitely helped me the most.
The payback for him, he's 12 for 23 this season, so certainly good karma from helping you out, hitting 522.
It is awesome. When he does good, dude, the whole dugout goes crazy. He's just such a great guy. He deserves all the good karma he's getting.
Nice, Cade Beloso. Shout out to him. And a shout out to Trey Morgan. Thank you for taking the time to join us. Best of luck, both with the college season and with your, hopefully, future pro career.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
More on Trey a little bit later in the show, but now we transition and talk prospects with Kyle Glazer of Baseball America. A note, this interview was conducted at the Sabre Analytics Conference, so some of the references, like the ones to Anthony Volpe, we didn't know what was going to happen there. All right, so actually, first thing I would ask before we look ahead to 2023 is looking back on your 2022 ranks. Where do you feel maybe you hit? Maybe where do you feel maybe you missed?
Yeah, I think what we're probably most proud of is we had Julio Rodriguez highest of any of the prospect, ranking organizations. We consistently have been getting just unbelievable reviews on him dating back to 2019, me being out in California. He came out to the Cal League that year, and the rest of our staff was based in North Carolina, so he was in the South Atlantic League. They saw him when West Virginia came down to play Greensboro. We got eyes on him very early, and just the text messages, people reaching out to us, scouts in the game saying, hey, have you seen this guy? You have to go see this guy. That doesn't happen often. I have been at BA for 7 years now. Julio's the only guy that's happened for. And so we continued to do our due diligence on him. I saw him in the Olympic qualifiers playing for the Dominican Republic, and he was just an unbelievable talent for his age. So I think for us, a lot of places you saw, Adley, Rutschman, Bobby Witt are kind of 1-2, and Julio's 3. For us, it was all three of them were very, very clear candidates to be number one overall. Adley ultimately got the nod just because, again, he came up later in catching. There's a different dynamic there, but he has the ability to be similarly talented to Julio Rodriguez just as a catcher, which is, you know, even more valuable than what Julio's doing in center field. So the two of them were our top two. And you know, Bobby Witt, there was an argument for him to be one, but as we talked to scouts around the game and, you know, put together all of our data points, it was pretty clear that those guys were kind of the two best, because one of the things with Bobby Witt was his plate discipline, that the swing decisions were just behind where those other two were, and that was kind of a separator. So, but looking back at it, that was a great prospect trio to have, and going Adley 1, Julio 2 is something we feel pretty good about. Julio could end up being 1. He's amazing. But yeah, I think when I look back, that's what I'm most proud of, is that we were on Julio. We had him ahead of where everyone else had him.
Going back to Bobby Witt, defensively also didn't have particularly the year that I think people would have liked him to have. Let's fast forward this year. I almost feel like it's cheating to take a guy that had 100 at-bats and say that he counts. There's two of those guys this year. What do you think of both of them?
Yeah, I mean, Gunnar Henderson and Corbin Carroll are both really, really talented. And as we went through this process again, reporting, diving into data, watching videos, seeing them ourselves, and tons and tons and tons of conversations with scouts all around the game, front office officials, it emerged pretty clearly they're the top two prospects in baseball in terms of what they project to be. They're not quite at the level of what Adley and Julio were last year, but they're both very, very good. I think with Gunnar Henderson, what just stands out is he's so well-rounded and just everything keeps getting better, right? It's an upward progression, really all aspects of his game, contact, power, speed, defense. And then with Corbin Carroll, he's always been super talented. He was just smaller, so there was concerns about his size, and he's really kind of dismissing them. You know, he missed most of 2021 with a shoulder injury, so I really get a chance to see him. But 2022, for all intents and purposes, it was his first full minor league season. Went straight to Double A, crushed, went to Triple A, crushed, got to the majors, held his own. So I think you feel really good about these two guys being really good big leaguers, and not just really good big leaguers, but guys who are well above average starters and potentially all-star types who would be significant contributors on first division teams.
We are a defense first podcast. Yeah. How do you feel about each of those guys defensively?
Yeah, I mean, Corbin Carroll can absolutely fly, and that speed allows him to just cover so much ground in center field. He doesn't have the greatest arm in the world, although it's actually gotten better. It's gotten a little stronger. So if you want to ding him, that's where you can play him in center field if, you know, you feel like Alec Thomas is a better center fielder. And there is a sense he is, and there's no shame in that. He was a Gold Glove finalist last year and fantastic out there. You know, if Alec Thomas hits, he's probably the center fielder Corbin Carroll plays left. If Alec Thomas doesn't hit, Corbin Carroll can absolutely play center field, no problems. He's very, very good out there. Yeah, I mean, Gunnar Henderson is just, he's one of those bigger shortstops, but he actually plays the position pretty well. Again, he's faster and quicker and twitchier than you'd think for a guy his size. So the reactions are there. The arm strength is certainly there. The soft hands are there. The actions are there. He can absolutely play shortstop. Again, Jorge Mateo was really good over there last year. If he hits, he's probably the shortstop, and Henderson's the third baseman. I personally don't think Jorge Mateo's going to hit. So, you know, again, we'll see. Yeah, the Orioles also have Joey Ortiz coming up, who's a great defender. So I do think there's a strong chance Gunnar Henderson ends up playing third base long term and could potentially be a Gold Glove caliber third baseman. You know, one of those guys who he could play shortstop pretty well. You slide him over to third, he has a chance to be one of the best third basemen in baseball.
In terms of sticking with the Orioles, and you're talking about Rutschman catching, catchers, with Francisco Alvarez certainly being one, Gabriel Moreno being another, with the Diamondbacks now instead of the Blue Jays. What are your expectations for them, and can they make it work defensively?
Yeah, Moreno, there's no question. He's a really, really good athlete. In fact, they're behind the plate. There's no question he can stay behind the plate, be an everyday caliber guy behind the plate defensively. He's going to hit for average, and there's some concerns about the power, but honestly, if you're hitting 300 with 8 to 10 homers playing plus defense behind the plate, you're an all-star. You're one of the best catchers in baseball. Yeah, there's really no concern there about him, the type of player he'll be. Again, all catchers, you have to stay healthy. It's a physical grind. You know, we'll see what happens. And we have seen some guys, the mental and physical grind of the position can kind of knock their offense down a little bit. We saw, for example, the guy he was traded for, Dalton Varsho, as soon as he moved out from behind the plate, his offense exploded. So, you know, there's always that possibility, but there's no concern about Gabriel Moreno behind the plate. Francisco Alvarez is a bit of a different story. You know, he's just a big hoss with a ton of power. look, he's a very, very big boy. He's not the best mover behind the plate. There are some things he has to clean up receiving-wise. But you have to remember, he was 20 years old when he came up last year. He didn't turn 21 until after the season. And he's moved pretty quickly. So there's still reps to come. So, you know, the receiving could improve. Again, I think it's more going to be, is he ever going to be the most mobile guy behind the plate? No. Could there be issues getting out of the crowd, especially as he gets older and maybe gets even bigger? Yeah. But I think with him, it's more the bat will play. You feel good about him being a guy who, if he gets 650 plate appearances, he can give you 30 bombs, you know, at 2-6 or 30 bombs. And even if that means he catches, you know, 80 games and DHs 60, you're okay with it.
He's a guy that you would certainly want. A lot of Yankee fans have flooded us with comments about Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, and they don't believe the defensive numbers that we have for him. We had him as, I believe, a 10 defensive run save this past year. Similar numbers in the past. We think he's a good defensive shortstop. There's another guy potentially waiting to fill his shoes, and Anthony Volpe. How would you evaluate him?
Yeah, Volpe's one of those guys who, can he play shortstop? Yes. He's better at second base. Really, the shortstop for the Yankees, if all goes according to plans, is Waldo Cabrera. That's the guy who's the better shortstop. That's the guy who is just the actions, the hands, the range, you know, everything. It's a little more what you're looking for. But again, he has some questions about the bat and, you know, got to hit the play every day. So if he doesn't hit enough, could Anthony Volpe be your everyday shortstop? Sure. Perfectly fine. You know, 50 grade shortstop, you know, average, not going to kill you. Certainly going to be better than what Gleyber Torres was for them and sort of the disasters that were happening when he was manning the position. But it's just going to be more fine defense. Really, if you want really good shortstop defense, that's where Peraza comes in. And then you just hope he hits enough to be in the lineup every day.
We have a total synthetic stat cast where we can mock a stat cast for AAA, AA, single A. And a guy that always shows up in that tool is Jackson Chourio. And you guys have him at near the very top of your prospect ranking list. That feels like in a year, we're going to be talking about this guy coming and or two. And I'd be curious for your take on him and kind of introduce him to people that might not be familiar.
Yeah, Brewers center field prospect who, I mean, he was the age of a high school senior last year and he hit his way to Double A. Super, super athletic. You'd see him, you know, make some great catches back against the wall in center field. But more than just pure athleticism, he's got instincts and feel for the game. So many 18-year-olds, just kind of raw athletes, you know, who can run really fast or jump really high. But, you know, first step isn't great, you know, getting around fly balls, you know, dealing with the wall, going back, you know, that takes time and reps. From the moment he stepped foot in extended spring training last year, I was like, whoa, this guy's not only incredibly talented and athletic and explosive, she's got skills, not just tools. He has skills. He has that feel for the game, the instincts, the abilities that you normally don't see from guys who should be high school seniors. You normally don't see it until they're 21, 22, 23. They've had a few years under their belt. So you saw that in all aspects of his game, defensively and at the plate too. Again, just the ability to adjust to different types of pitching, different spots. You know, a lot of guys at that level who they'll feast on fastballs, but they really struggle with breaking balls, or they really can only hunt one pitch in the zone. The ability to manipulate the barrel in different parts, it takes time. Not with him. He was already so far advanced compared to his similarly aged peers, and that's why he got up to high A. And you know, he struggled a little more there, and they have to Double A, which, hey, any 18-year-old not named Bryce Harper or Mike Trout would struggle at Double A, and Trout did at 19. So, I mean, I think it's one of those things where he is one of those freakish athletes who also has feel for the game and an ability level that's pretty substantial. Now he's got to stay healthy. He has to show he can make more adjustments against upper level pitching. He still has to develop physically. He's still young. There's still, you know, a lot of meat he's upon his bones, but everything he showed last year, he has a chance to be a dynamic player who makes a real impact at the plate, on defense, on the base pass. You know, one of those rare guys who can beat you in a lot of different ways.
Since texts were text-worthy, to use the term. All right. We always, as I mentioned, we're a defense-first podcast. Among the guys that are in your top 100, who are the ones that you feel pretty good about from a defensive perspective?
Yeah, I mean, Pete Crow Armstrong in the outfield is pretty fun to watch out there. I went out to Myrtle Beach last year to do a story on him and watch him. It's just fun to watch him even just warm up out there, just, you know, batting practice, watching him shag flies. There's the beauty in it, the grace in it. It's just, again, I'm a baseball purist. I played growing up. I come from that side of things where I appreciate the little things. And yeah, even watching him shag, it's just, again, it's kind of beautiful, as weird as that might sound. So he's pretty spectacular. You know, everything you want, reads, instincts, range, the way he moves. He makes difficult catches make look really easy, and he makes the difficult ones too with, you know, spectacular dives or leaps at the wall. He has a chance to be not just a great defender. He has a chance to be the guy who reels off 10 straight gold gloves in center field and is the de facto, you know, this is the best center fielder in baseball. There's no other argument. You know, what Kiermaier was in his prime, Pilar was in his prime. You know, go back to Andrew Jones as you want. I mean,
how far away is he?
Well, he got to high A last year, and he needs another full year in the minors. You know, could he debut in Wrigley this year? Sure, I'll start in double A. Maybe goes triple A. Maybe he gets a call at the end of the year, but the Cubs are rebuilding. He's still growing and developing physically. He missed a year with a shoulder injury, so he needs another year of development to continue his physical growth and physical maturity and just continue to get better at the plate. He's good at the plate, but, like, there's things to work on. Defensively, he's spectacular. And then infielders, Ezekiel Tovar with the Rockies is, again, I talked about Jackson Churro not just being a tools guy, but a skills and an ability guy so far beyond his similarly aged peers. That's Tovar on the infield. Again, you see all the things you want to see from a young shortstop, you know, exciting range, you know, quick hands, you know, strong arm, but it's more than that. It's, he positions himself perfectly. It's making throws on the run, but doing so under control. You don't see that a lot from guys who, you know, were in the lower minors only a year ago and were in double A for the most part this year. It's where he positions himself on cuts. I mean, he's very technically sound and very mature in how he plays while also having this incredibly rangy tool set. He again has a chance to be a guy who contends for Gold Glove awards very quickly.
And I would imagine that's not something that you typically see.
No, especially, I mean, I saw it in the low A, which low A is a lot of guys who are super twitchy and have big tools, but they play too fast. Airmail throws. They take their eye off the ball. They misplay, you know, hard shots off the bat. Like, the things that take reps and experience. Even high double A, you still see a good chunk of that. He has gotten out of that. He looked like a major league caliber shortstop from day one in low A, which I got to tell you, I I've only been at this for 7 years. I don't go back 30 years. I can't tell you what, you know, some of the greatest defensive shortstops of all time looked like in low A, but I can't think of another example where I saw that from a guy that young right off the bat at low A.
Ezekiel Tovar, Pete Crow Armstrong, and Kyle Glazer. Thank you for taking the time to join us.
Yeah.
We'll be following you all year. Are you listening to the Off the Charts Football Podcast? If you're not, you should be. Each week, Matt Manacharian and our research and development team or football operations staff dissect the game, strategy, players, and much more. Big focus on the NFL draft the next 2 weeks. We encourage you to check it out. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. And we are joined by the VP of Baseball for SIS, Bobby Scales. Happy opening day. How are you?
Happy opening day, gentlemen. How are we doing? Mark, Justin, our producer. I've got to give him some love, too, for chopping it up on the back end, making a sound like gold. I'm excited. I am really excited about opening day 2023. It's awesome. Let's go.
All right. Well, before we get to the Major League side, you wanted to talk about Trey Morgan, who we talked to earlier in the podcast. You got some goods on him using your contacts. And I'm curious for your take on him as a player and him in the interview.
Well, first of all, I want to comment on the young man first. I wasn't part of the interview. Mark, you did a fantastic job with that. But the thing that just comes across, and again, you sent me the audio file after you conducted the interview with Trey, and there's just real genuine joy for playing baseball and real genuine joy for being on that team down there at LSU, who's obviously the number one ranked team in the country. Impressive record this year and obviously an impressive legacy in college baseball. Played with two guys, both Ryan Terrio and Mike Fontenot when I was with the Cubs. And he has real genuine joy for seemingly just being down there, being in the mix and being part of that team and that winning tradition. So that's the first thing I want to comment. It was just nice and refreshing to hear his voice and how much he enjoys playing the game. He's a really good player. We know that. Our numbers bear that out. One of the things he really talked about in that interview was just, and obviously, you know, we're a defensive centric, I'm trying to change that, a defensive centric company and podcast. We like hitters too. But just how important defense is at first base. And one of the things I want to expand upon, one of the things I want to talk about is just how important the teaching of proper defense at first base is. And it's one, for me, it's a pet peeve because I believe that it is the single most undertaught thing we do in all of baseball across the board. Infield coaches are going to absolutely hate me for this. I don't care, because 95%, maybe 99% of infield instructors, whether they be a private infield instructor at the high school level or at the amateur level, whether they be at the professional level, 99% of infield instructors are old middle infielders, whether it be second base, shortstop, or what have you. They're all guys who had to either at the end of their career learn how to play first base or have talked to really good first basemen and learned some of the things that they can teach. But it is my belief that really, really good first basemen, and Trey mentioned Freddie Freeman. He mentioned Rizzo by name in the interview you had with him. Those guys are really good first basemen. And I believe that there's just small little nuanced things that can only be taught by guys who did a really good job playing the position at first base. I'll give you this example. When I was running the farm system in LA, I had long believed this because I was a guy, again, utility guy, played first base in my career. And I would have Hal Morris, who was our director of professional scouting at the time. I'd be like, Hal, I need you for 2 days. And you take our first baseman and you go teach them how to play first base, and you give them all the goods you got around the bag, all the little nuanced pieces. And it wasn't a knock on our infield instructors. It was just the fact that when a really good first baseman is teaching first base, it just hits look different. Same thing. Rico Bronya was on our scouting staff over there as well. I said, Rico, I need you for 3 days. Can you put a uniform on and can go teach our kids first base? Just, if you got them, you do what you want. It's called Rico time. We're going to put you on half field and you go, you know, you have 45 minutes and you can pick out who you want. Teach these guys how to move around the bag. Teach these guys what to do. Teach these guys the little nuances about the position. So he mentioned some of the work that he got with at the Breakthrough Series down at the Jackie Robinson Complex in Vero Beach and some of the things that he had learned down there. So I think it's really important, if you're a young amateur player and listen to this, or if you're wherever you are in your development as a baseball player, or you know someone that is a first baseman, find someone who played the position and played it pretty well if you can, and just ask all the questions you can ask of that person, because I think it's really important. I think it's really telling some of the lessons he got. Obviously, it started with his dad and the picks and what have you, but just the importance that the first baseman has on an infield is, I won't say immeasurable, because we try to measure it here at SIS. That's what we do. But it is incredibly important to see just the level of confidence that all of your infielders will have in you. If they know, if they just throw it, you're going to catch it. And you may not get the runner out. It may be a pick. It may be a two hopper over there. It may be, and Trey's extremely athletic young man, he may be a play where he has to leap in the air, but he's going to catch it. And even if he may save you an error, but you also may get a out on a tremendous play where you may not have been able to, or a situation where you wouldn't even have thrown it if you have a lesser first baseman over there. So I was really intrigued by the things he said there about his first base play.
Every pitcher that I talked to that worked on Baseball Tonight would say the same thing about how first base defense is certainly immeasurable. Also immeasurable is the impact that, I guess you would call it, a mentor can have on you. And in his case, one of his mentors was actually kind of not just a teammate, but also a rival in terms of the position. And I know that you wanted to shout that out in particular, that kid that helped Trey out learning a new spot. That's important.
100%. Trey talked about a young man named Kate Beluso who was already there at LSU, was on the team, was a first baseman. And when you're in a situation like that, you're not dumb. You know the guy's getting there probably to take your job, and he's younger and he's more athletic and his upside's probably higher. And this young man, Kate Beluso, as Trey said, took him under his wing, showed him the ropes, told him how this is how we do things here at LSU. And it speaks to two different things. Number one, it speaks to the young man himself and how selfless he is, because he wants to win. He wants to win for the name across his jersey. But it also speaks to the culture that the coaches have created down there. You have to go get kids like this. You have to go recruit kids who are selfless, who will put the team above them. You have to go get kids that understand that they're a piece of a winning puzzle. And I'm a big culture person. I do a lot of stuff in the leadership and culture and organizational building space, most of it in my free time, just because that's where I am now. But the point is, it speaks to this young man, Cade. It also speaks to the culture that the coaches at LSU have built, that he was so selfless that he's like, listen, we're going to be better if you're good. So let me help you get to become the best player that he can be. And also too, listen, he said he was something, was it 13 or 12 for 30 or something on a year. So he's definitely contributing on the field too. But what's immeasurable, and we love our measurables here, but what's immeasurable is what he's doing in that clubhouse and with that team and that culture. So shouts out to that young man. Good for you, and can keep doing what you're doing.
Cade Beloso, the 2018 Louisiana High School Player of the Year, starting first baseman at LSU for 2 years before Trey stepped in and took over. Let's shift to the major leagues. We're talking rookies with Kyle Glazer, but I want to talk kind of breakthrough guys with you. And there are two that are pitching on opening day that I don't want to just talk about regarding opening day, but I want to talk about as kind of a theme for the season. That's Mitch Keller and Hunter Green. What are your expectations for them?
Well, I'm going to start with Mitch only because in my previous life, before I got to Sports Info Solutions, I was fortunate enough to work as the field coordinator and coordinator of strategic initiatives with the Pittsburgh Pirates. And I am not going to sit here and act like I had any bearing on Mitch Keller's development as a pitcher outside of the few occasions where he asked my perspective as a hitter and then also as someone who was teaching the base running in the organization as well. But he's an outstanding young man. I was going to call him a kid. He's not a kid anymore. He's 26 years old. And it has taken him a while to get to this point. His development path definitely was not linear, and it definitely was not completely on the up all the time. But I will say this, the second half of last year, with the help of that coaching staff and the entire pitching department there in Pittsburgh, Mitch Keller was pretty nasty. Much, much improved strike throwing, much improved. He was 2-5. Yes, he was 2-5, but a 3.09 ERA, 13 starts, 66 hits and 70 innings. 24 earned runs, struck out 61, walked 26. And that, for me, much less traffic on the bases. He was much more effective. He kept the ball in the ballpark for the most part. And you saw the evolution of a young man who's starting to figure it out in the major leagues, finally, with a team that was challenged in many different ways. I'm not going to bang on the Pirates, but you know the record was what it was. He's starting to figure it out. Gets the nod opening day. Good for him. Congratulations to him. And his family and all the guys that had a hand in his development along the way. And this is a celebration of a young man starting to figure it out in the big leagues. And hopefully he can go on and continue his development and be the impact pitcher that people believed he could be when they drafted him.
And what about Hunter Green?
Oh, well, you know, I was a little bit critical of him early in the year, but and really shouldn't have been. This young man pitched his way onto that team last year. Rightfully so. He was much better than the league was in AAA and perhaps not quite ready to be in the big leagues, but there was no sense in sending him back to AAA a year ago. Got hurt by the home run ball early and by some walks early. But I tell you what, the second half of the season last year, he really figured it out. He was absolutely tremendous in the second half of the year. Batting average against was 209. Opposition slug was 410. A boatload of strikeouts and not that many walks. Matter of fact, in the second half of the year last year, 96 strikeouts, 24 walks. As opposed to 68 strikeouts and 24 walks in the first half of the year. This young man figured it out. Credit to the pitching coaches and the staff and the pitching development over there in Cincinnati. And as such, he's got the opening day nod for the Cincinnati Reds this year. This kid's got superstar written all over him from the way his raw stuff, the way he was able to make adjustments in the second half of the year, his presence on the mound, how mature he is for a young man his age. Really, really, really bright future. Great to see him get the nod opening day and hopefully for him and for Cincinnati fans, the first of many opening days in his career.
With Mitch Keller, and it's true with Hunter Green too, and someone like Jesus Luzardo, same kind of thing. End of the season in particular, Luzardo had a couple of great starts against the Braves and the Mets. Keller pitched very well, as you said. Hunter Green had these really good starts second half, but dominant in September. There used to be a thought that September numbers, you don't buy into them as much, but now a little different because there are fewer minor leaguers that are up. What are your takes on looking at September and late season performance for a guy?
No, Mark, you're absolutely right. I think it's the game has changed, and the game has changed because the rules have changed. Number one, you know, back in the day, and even in my day when I played, you could say September's don't get the line in the front office, do not get fooled by September and do not get fooled by spring training. For the reasons you just explained, there's a lot of spring training. Everybody's just trying to work into it a little bit. Variables are very high at that point. September, depending on where you are in the standings, obviously, there's a lot more minor leaguers up filling out the 40-man roster. Now, with the rules where you can only bring up a few guys off the 40-man, those teams are pretty much intact. Like the same team you saw in July, at least in theory, is going to be very similar to that which you see in September as well. The second piece is this. There's more wild card spots available now. So when you have more wild card spots available, you're going to have more competitive games that have bearing on the standings. It was also, you know, it was a situation too where if you got a fourth place team in the West facing off against a fourth place team in the, let's just call it the Central, back in the day when the 40-man rosters were up, I remember one year I was up. I was up and I played in this game. So maybe that speaks to my ability, but I played in this game. We were in the old Florida Marlins Park in Joe Robbie. We were out of it. I say we, the Cubs, we were out of it. And the Marlins were out of time. And it was basically New Orleans versus Iowa in Major League uniform. So you're not going to get near as much of that at this point where the rules are in Major League Baseball now, because you're going to have a lot more teams that are still in the mix to the very end of the season for playoff spots. So you have to pay a little bit more attention. I think there's more credence in what happens in September at this point.
All right. And then we look at two guys that are going to start the season in the major leagues that maybe it's a little unexpected, but Anthony Volpe and Jordan Walker. We talked about them with Kyle Glazer. At the time that we talked about them with Kyle, we didn't know that they were necessarily going to be called up. What was your take on the fact that they're going to start the season in the major leagues and expectations for them?
I love it. And you're doing it with competitive teams. These teams, you can't be afraid. If these guys have proven that they're one of your 26 best players, and likely for both of these guys, they're going to start and play quite a bit. They're going to get an opportunity because where these guys are in their development, if you don't believe this guy's going to start for you opening day, then you need to send him to AAA because there's more. It does them no good for these young men at 20 and 21, I believe, to sit on the bench in the big leagues just to get the big league experience. These guys are thought of as guys, dudes, as we would say, and it's their opportunity to play. I will say this. I love it for that reason. I also love it for the fact that you've got two teams that are hunting for the playoff, and these front offices really believe these are two of our best 26 players, really probably two of our best nine players, and they're giving them the opportunity. Whereas in years past, you see teams, you go back to the Chris Bryant saga, that was what it was for him to get sent down that spring. When you've got veteran players who have been there, seen it, been in the big leagues and know what they're looking at, telling people this guy needs to be on our roster and he still gets sent to AAA, look, at the end of the day, I was in a front office, two front offices. That still grinds my gears because at the end of the day, you're trying to win games, right? And so you want to run your best team out there, give everybody the best opportunity to win games on a nightly basis. And you have guys that really, really genuinely feel like that's our best opportunity to win. It's tough to send that message throughout your clubhouse. Teams did it. We know why they did it, to manipulate the service time. And it is what it is. But I love to see when a guy performs and teams give these guys the opportunity. So like I said, more than likely, both of these guys are going to start opening day or shortly thereafter when the matchups dictate, because they're going to play, because where they are in their development, they're not going to sit the bench.
So I'm particularly curious with Volpe, because by our hard hit rate numbers, which we're able to do for the minor leagues that we sell to team clients, I can tell you his hard hit numbers are not all that great. Now, he had 50 steals in the minor leagues. He had 50 steals, 21 home runs between Somerset and Scranton Wilkes-Barre last season. So I am curious to see just how he does, because it's like, is he going to exceed what he did, double and triple A, right from the start? Or is it going to be a little bit of a learning curve for him? I'm curious to see.
Well, it's going to be a learning curve. We've talked about that in previous podcasts. The hardest jump you're ever going to make as a major league, as a player, is that jump from AAA to the big leagues. I did it at 31, and it was still hard. And he's doing it at
21, 22
years old, whatever it's going to be. But you know what? Some people are just built for this. I mean, the kid grew up, he actually went to high school with a friend of mine's son, Aiden Kane, doing great things at University of Delaware. Shouts out to him. But he was on that team in New Jersey in the shadow of New York, Yankee fan from birth. I'm hoping the kid's built for it. You love these stories. This is, I'm not going to put the second coming of Jeter on. I'm not putting that on the kid yet. Yep. But you hope that for a kid. This is the team he grew up rooting for. He wanted to play shortstop for the New York Yankees, and now he's going to get that opportunity. So there's going to be struggles. He's going to bump his head. And by all accounts, some of the people that I know inside that organization, and I know the scout that manages that region, the kid's made of the right stuff. And all you can hope for his sake, for the Yankees, I guess if you're a Yankee fan, is that the young man handles it, gets through the learning curve, and plays the way he's capable of playing.
Number 14 prospect by Baseball America, Kyle Glazer, talked about him when we had our segment with him. Bobby Scales, thank you for joining us. Looking forward to talking to you throughout the season.
Always a pleasure.
And with that, we wrap up the episode. Back in 2 weeks. For Bobby Scales, Kyle Glazer, and Trey Morgan, thank you for listening to the Sports Info Solutions Baseball Podcast.
Thank you for tuning in to the SIS Baseball Podcast. If you like the show, please rate and review us on iTunes. If you have any questions, email the show at mark@sportsinfosolutions.com or tweet us at sportsinfo_SIS.